Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson hands it to Henry.
Ball, balls out. Picked up by the Lions. They've got it inside the 20-yard line. DJ Reed with the football in his hands. The Lions stripped it away from Derrick Henry. What a big turn of events, and the Lions have got it now.
Yeah, the Lions enter the chat as, once again, a Super Bowl contender. What's up? This is EJ Stewart joined by Andrew Bogus. You're listening to Maggie and Perloff. Maggie and Perloff out today, so you get EJ and Bogues in today. And watching this Monday Night Football game, which the Lions, even though this was a one-score game and this was a very competitive, I thought, elite football game. I watched this game, and maybe I'm the wrong audience to say this because I'm a Jets fan, but I was like, wow, this is NFL football. Like, I'm just used to seeing, like, just such ineptitude and such poor play. And I'm watching these teams go up and down the field and just high-level plays being made on both sides, thinking, like, wow, these are clearly two of the best teams in the NFL. And I'll be honest, I think this may have felt surprising as a performance from the Lions if you would have transported me back from week one and said, okay, you just watched the Lions get destroyed by the Packers. And I'm not going to tell you what happens next week, but I'm actually going to transport you into week two. And I'm going to tell you that David Montgomery is going to run for over 100. I'm going to tell you that they're going to throw for all these yards and these touchdowns. They're going to score 38 points on the Ravens on the road in Monday Night Football, and they're going to win fairly convincingly. I would have said, well, whew, my Super Bowl pick's okay, so that's good. But I would have thought, man, that feels totally unlike the team I watched get housed by the Packers 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, do you think playing the Bears and any kind of manufactured Ben Johnson drama like was what they needed in week two? If week two was a nondescript game, would things maybe have been a little bit different? Like, did that help them turn the page from the Packer game, or did the Packer loss fuel week two and then last night as well? That they took their immediate lumps and anything, any hangover, any whatever, got smacked out of them by Green Bay, and now they're just simply off and running?
I feel like that's a great question, folks, because to me, this is, I know NFL players and players who play the game or are retired and they watch the game, they kind of hate when we do these quote-unquote narrative-based conversations about a team's performance. But I do feel like the Lions' whole season has been narrative-based, and I think it actually is a factor in what has happened in these results. Because I think if you think about week one, I'm starting to feel like no team that played the Packers was going to have a competitive game against the Packers in week one. I'm starting to feel like the Packers, they get the Micah Parsons trade, there's all this hype, momentum, excitement. There's just pure positive energy going into that game. I'm starting to feel like the Lions just walked into a buzzsaw. That even if Ben Johnson was on the sidelines calling plays and Aaron Glenn was holding that call sheet on the defensive side, that they still would have got blown out. I'm starting to feel like the Packers would have just blown anybody out that played them in week one because they were such a house on fire and they were so ready to go and they were so excited having Micah Parsons in there. The fans were awesome. It was just a great environment and they got smoked. But I'm starting to feel like maybe that was more about the Packers being in their moment, in their feelings, than it was maybe about the Lions. And then to combine that with not only do we got to get right after that embarrassing performance in Green Bay, but now our old homie is coming back to the crib and we got to get to 1-1 and he's coming in with his new guys. And we want to kind of show them that, hey, it's going to be a long road to get for you to get to the top of the NFC North, dog. Like, I think a lot of that did play into how they played in week two. So I think when we come into week three, having all that stuff kind of pushed to the side and the emotions and everything on all sides kind of put away, and now it's all right, go out there, do what you normally do, be yourself, do your job, as Bill Belichick likes to say. If the Lions are themselves, they're better than 95% of the opponents that they play, and they could beat anyone. And like I said earlier in the show, to me, when the Lions play their A game is just about as good as anybody else. I feel like when they're playing with that kind of balance on offense where they could run the ball over you and Jared Goff is just picking you apart with what I thought was some pinpoint accuracy in many big spots in their defense, which is going to give up yards and going to give up touchdowns. They did that even with Aaron Glenn calling the defense. They caused turnovers, and they hit the quarterback.
We're going to bite a kneecap off.
And they bite some kneecaps off. That is what they do as a defense. And seeing them look more like themselves to me, I look at it and say, okay, we got this kind of weird first 3 weeks of the Lions season out of the way. And when the dust is settled, Lions still the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC.
It certainly looks pretty. I mean, there have always been good teams who don't win beautifully,
yeah.
But the Lions win beautifully between the creativity and the gutsy calls. And last night, just defender after defender flying around Lamar Jackson, jumping on his back, diving at his legs, chasing him down. The Lions looked the part last night. It was visually pleasing to watch them play those four quarters the way that they did. Maybe my one concern with them remains, and I don't know if they're more susceptible to this than others, but you go back to week one, again, the Packers game, the playoff loss to the Commanders where Jared Goff has three interceptions.
Yeah.
He had one in the regular season where he had five picks, right?
Yeah.
I think that they won the game. But they still have this ability, and I'm not smart enough to tell the other team how to do it, but they do every once in a while just throw this dud out there.
Yeah.
Somebody can stumble upon the formula to mess them up royally. But more times than not, they look the way they did last night. And coming off just eviscerating the Bears and then doing this on the road in primetime last night, it's hard not to think of them as the second best team in the NFC. I still, going back to hour number one, I've seen the Rams now almost twice win in Philadelphia,
yeah.
So I kind of still want to just in the slightest of way maybe make them the second-best team in the conference. But, man, the Lions sent all sorts of messages last night by being physical and creative and gusty to win that game.
I think that's what's so impressive and in some ways so kind of concerning if you're looking at it from the Ravens side, right? Because we think about the Ravens, you think about physicality on their side. You think about defense flying around. Bodies everywhere. That's what you think of when you think about Baltimore Ravens football, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But you have a defense that is struggling mightily. You got to just throw out the Browns game because the Browns have, if not the worst, one of the worst offenses in the NFL. You look at what happened when they played against two elite offenses, and two totally different teams, by the way. Like the Lions and the Bills attack you offensively totally differently. Like there's no running game with Jared Goff the way there is with Josh Allen. There's not an elite, number one wide receiver like there is with Amon-Ra St. Brown, and the Bills don't have that. So these are two totally different offenses that attack you in totally different ways. And it seems like regardless of how you get attacked, if you're the Ravens, you have no answer.
Yeah.
You don't seem to be able to attack the quarterback that's running around, the guy that's in the pocket. You can't attack a standard running game because James Cook and Montgomery ran all over you. So I asked a question earlier, like, what do the Ravens do well defensively? How do you fix this, right? Because when we think about teams and when they're struggling, you say, okay, we got to get back to who we are. I don't know who the Ravens are. Like, when we say we got to get back to who we are, okay, what are they, a blitzing team? Are they a team that's going to hit the quarterback a bunch? No. Are they a team that's going to stop the run first and be a run defense team first and then let the passing kind of happen after that? Not really. Again, we've seen them struggle against the run. I don't know what their identity is defensively, and I think that is where some of that criticism could lie with someone like a John Harbaugh or even an Ozzie Newsome in terms of the players they've put in position to put together this defense. It's hard to believe that this is the same franchise where Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs and Ed Reed were going out there balling night in and night out. This was a night game. Ravens at night in Baltimore at home are just – usually that's just write in a W. That performance last night was definitely alarming from that standpoint.
We haven't mentioned Eric DaCosta's name enough. I mean, he's the guy now making the selections for this roster. And I think that has to be your number one concern right now. They're the injuries, Matabuke and Van Noy, those are real. But if this is just coming down to the simplest reason, the simplest level is that this is just a talent thing, then maybe you can't fix that enough this year, right? If they just don't have the guys, for various reasons. Guys haven't panned out. Guys have been developed correctly. They made the wrong choice in free agency or in the draft. If they're just losing because in these games, in the games, the ones that you are measuring stick games, like the Bills and like the Lions, if the Lions and the Bills are just better than them, then that's not getting fixed in season.
It's not. And what is also not potentially getting fixed in season is if we are seeing some kind of decline of Derrick Henry. And it's weird to talk about fumbling as an aspect to a decline, but if this is going to be something that you have to worry about with Derrick Henry, then the Ravens have major concerns. I'm not ready to throw them out completely because I do feel like when it comes to how poorly they're playing defense right now, they can get better because I've seen them get better. I saw them last year be really a bottom end kind of defense for a third of the season almost and then kind of turn it around and become much better by the end. This situation with Derrick Henry and these fumbles late in games is a little scary. Like, I don't know if, you know, Tiki Barber works here. He's someone who famously got over fumbling issues. I don't know what it is at this point in Derrick Henry's career where now the fumbles are a problem, if it's mental or if it's something physically he has to change. But when you think about the Ravens and how they beat you by leaning on the ground game late in games to kind of wear on you, if somehow that can't become part of the equation to them winning games, then this idea of them getting over the hump and beating these elite teams, it's just a fantasy. It's just not going to happen if they can't rely on Derrick Henry to hold on to the football.
Because it's not just fumbles. Now, I lived through Tiki's issues with the Giants growing up here and then getting to know Tiki. We've, you know, this, and there's always jokes and high and tight,
such
whatever.
A nice guy.
But like Tiki's problem was the volume of fumbles. The issue for Derrick Henry right now is fumbling at the wrong time. Never fumble. But if you fumble in the first quarter, there's 3+ quarters to figure things out.
Yeah.
The fumble in Buffalo fueled this historic collapse. The fumble last night coming in the fourth quarter in a 1-score game is where this game turned. It's where the Lions were able to put more points on the board and finally extend the lead past a 1-score game.
Yeah.
And obviously he's not, and I didn't even think last night, not to make excuses, but he seemed to have a pretty good, he wasn't being loose with the football. He just didn't know that Aiden Hutchinson was coming from behind him with this big club. So it was not to, again, let Derrick Henry off the hook, but last night was more, looked more aberration than the Bills fumble did to me. Like, it was just a great play by Hutchinson, as opposed to Henry doing something technically wrong with the football to put it in danger. But three games, a fumble in each of them, and then the fumble against Buffalo and the fumble last night are the defining moment to a certain extent in both of those games.
You are a loser, dude.
And they're going to have more moments like this, and he needs to be on the field with the football, so he's got to figure this out.
You know what's interesting, and I want to hear from Derrick Henry in a second, but this was a conversation that happened with Saquon Barkley that ended up not being a conversation because they ended up winning a Super Bowl, obviously, and he ended up being a phenomenal player and having an all-time caliber season. But when Saquon dropped the ball against Atlanta early in the season,
right,
a lot of the conversation that happened with Saquon was, well, he's a Giant.
That's what he does.
Which means he's a loser, which means when it comes down to it, he's going to screw up in the end. Which was weird because it's not like Saquon really had, in my recollection, like a moment where there was this big game, and the Giants have a lot of big games, but this big game or this big situation where Saquon fell through and that's why the Giants lost. I don't remember that being part of the conversation. Now, they did lose a lot of games and there was a lot of blowouts and a lot of games where maybe he didn't play well, but I didn't think of these moments where he came up short.
They weren't games that turned on one moment.
Exactly.
Other than the opening kickoff.
But like with this, when it came to with Derrick Henry now, we are now seeing these moments. And when we think about he came from Tennessee, obviously a place where they never won a title, though they were a playoff team. And you join a Baltimore team that is starting to, not starting, they have the reputation of being chokers, of being a team that when you get to the elite teams or you're playing a big game that matters, that somehow they're going to find a way to lose.
Yep.
And as great as Derrick Henry had been for them last season, and he had a, we kind of forget, he had a monster game one besides the fumble. I mean, he ran for 169 yards in that game. But you almost wonder, is this starting to become a contagious thing for the Ravens? Where it's like, if it's not going to be Lamar, it's going to be the defense, or it's going to be Mark Andrews, or it's going to be Derrick Henry. Somebody's going to find a way to screw this thing up, because now the team doesn't believe they can actually come through in these
right.
moments.
They're going to need a Pedro Serrano and Joe Boo and some rum and a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket to figure this out. And how about this, and why the offense needs to be on its P's and Q's? I'm just seeing this tweet now. It's from overnight. These are the teams that have given up the most points this NFL season. The fifth most points, the Jets. Number four.
Likely story.
The Bears. Third most points allowed, the Titans at 94. Tied then for the most points allowed this season, the Dolphins and the Ravens. So the Ravens are on a list. First of all, yeah. they should never be on top of the most points allowed list. But they're in a group with the Dolphins, whose head coach is a dead man walking.
Yeah.
The Titans, whose head coach might also soon be a dead man walking. The Bears, who are very much, obviously, in a facelift and a rebuild and figuring things out. And then the Jets. This is bad company always considered for the Ravens.
Yeah, that's one win combined with all those teams that they're with. All those other teams, the Bears have one win. Everyone else is, they're 0-4. So they're playing defense on a level of a team that should not have a win. They have one win.
They've won.
Because they played the Browns.
Right.
And because they have Lamar Jackson, I guess. But that's all they have. I want to hear Derrick Henry, because as you mentioned, Bogus, this was the third straight game where he has had a fumble.
Lost some words, man. But, keep working in practice. Try to put emphasis on it in practice and try to work on as hard as I can.
Now, we saw a very emotional Derrick Henry on the sidelines. The helmet slam and the stumble was the video that is gone viral because it was kind of funny. Like, I hate to say
funny.
That, but it was funny to see a guy slam his helmet but fall down while he's doing it.
Plus, he's like 300 pounds of muscle, it's a lot falling.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know if like the bench was going to survive when he hit the bench the way he did. But to me, I'm a little concerned about this moving forward. And I've said that earlier, but to me, like, even his reaction being so over the top, and I don't mean like over the top in the sense that he was like, you know, performative in any way. I don't think he was. I think he was outside of his mind. This is a guy who is normally very mild-mannered, very cool, and he was so emotional in that moment. And then there were other moments where it seemed like they kept cutting to him on the sidelines, and they still were trying to get him to settle down and calm down, and he was beside himself. I want to hear cut 30 here, Derrick Henry explaining kind of why he was so frustrated.
It just keeps occurring, so I'm trying to work on it, man. I'm my worst critic, so you know I'm not going to try to beat myself up too much, but it's hard not to when you know it's consecutive and consistent of me doing the same thing.
I got to be honest, when they kept cutting to him and showing him like walking around, his hands on his head, looking around, that actually felt to me slightly disingenuous.
Really?
That felt more like, oh man, everybody look at me like I'm not for us at home.
Sure.
Like on the sideline for someone to come over and be like, it's okay, don't worry about it, it's not a big deal. Mm. Like I don't think he was like actually that beside himself. If I'm putting myself in that situation, I'm just sitting on the bench staring into nowhere. Now, I'll slam my helmet. I might fall down on the ground like he did, but then I'm just sitting there. I'm not getting up and walking around going, look at me. I'm so frustrated. Look. Like, it didn't feel all the way honest. It might have been, and that's fine, but at one point, I'm like the third cut.
Yeah.
I was doing something else. I'm like, I sit on my couch like, he's got to sit down now. Like, enough. We get it.
It was a lot. And you mentioned, it was like at least a third. There might have been four cuts to him. Like, it seemed like the whole Lions drive, every play, they were going back to Derrick Henry to see what the live reaction was. And he was still emoting. He was still doing something.
And something new, too.
Yeah, which was interesting. The only reason why I did think it was genuine was because of how beat up he was in the first game when he fumbled. Because we had a lot of sound from that first game. Where I was surprised he apologized to the team after the Bills game. I didn't. You're a walk-in Hall of Famer. You fumble, things happen. Like I'm like, all right, like I don't know. I was surprised that happened. I was like, wow, okay, this must have been a really big deal to him that he fumbled and obviously put them in a situation to lose this game. Also, to me, it felt like that Bills game. There were so many other breakdowns, particularly by the Ravens defense. Like they had a huge lead in that game. So, yes, that fumble was big, but the Ravens could have put that game away in many ways, and they didn't. With this one, they were in a dogfight, and this was kind of the deciding play or the play that kind of shifted the momentum. So I understood if he was upset about the last one, where he could have easily said to himself, okay, I fumbled, that was bad, but the defense gave us literally no help at all. Here, I think he's like, oh my God, I actually turned this game. Because I know we can't stop these guys, but we're still in this game. And if we keep scoring, we can still win. And I just coughed up the ball. Now they're in a short field, and now they're going to score.
I'm laughing because on our monitor, they just again showed the helmet slam and the collapse on the bench, and it's just not funny. So I did not have that same reaction. I'd rather him apologize all the time to his teammates than the weird stomping, pouting, huffing and puffing thing last night. It just didn't feel right to me. But I get the apology from the Buffalo game feeling like he let them down. You're right. There were multiple culprits in that collapse. That one play can't turn 40-25 into 41-40 in 5 minutes. Everyone's involved in that one. So he didn't need to single himself out, but I understand why he felt the need to do that. Last night was directly more to the outcome of the game. So he can be heartbroken, be frustrated, apologize, buy bagels this morning when they go to a facility to watch, you know, to watch film, all that kind of stuff. But it just felt like last night the, oh my God, I just fumbled again. Guys, what am I going to, like, it just, I don't know. I was over it.
I think the other thing that made it odd is he was so icy while he was crashing out. Like, he's got the nose ring, he's got the earrings and the chain. Like,
and he's a giant.
And he's 6'6", 250. And I'm just like, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
And to me, I don't know, if I was an NFL player, I see all these guys are so iced out now. Like, on my fiance Andrea was watching the game. I forgot which game I was watching. But she's like, oh my God, he's playing with that chain on? I'm like, they're like baseball players now. They go out there like it's a fashion show.
And not even like the fashion part of it. I want to live in a world where I'm not worried about my like $15,000 pendant breaking during a game.
Which happens.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Or where'd my huge diamond earring go?
Yeah.
Like that stuff's coming off for protection. I
almost feel like it's a flex that they do that. Like they do it almost because they know, well, if I lose it, y'all know I can get it. Y'all know I got it. Like, I'm all right. Like, trust me, guys. I could lose this $100,000 chain and just get me another one.
Who was the last guy that we had people walking the field afterwards trying to find something, a broken piece of jewelry?
I forgot who it was.
It actually might have been a baseball game.
Yes, it was a Mets
Francisco
game.
Lindor?
Was it Lindor?
Lindor definitely lost, I think, an earring or something sliding into home. I feel like for like almost
at
like a walk-off.
Field, yeah.
Yeah. And like they were looking around. I think this was last season. And then they spent like
the overnight period.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I think it might have actually been a day game. So like they were just, it was an afternoon.
It was.
But like they spent the last however many, you know, hours like just walking around the field. They were like, what's going on out there? They're trying to find an earring. I think he lost.
2 weeks ago, I lost my car key. I just took, instead of having my big, like fat, like ring of keys, house key, I just took the key, my car key off the chain, off the hook.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had it in my pocket at Jake's flag football practice.
All right.
And I guess in me moving around or maybe taking my phone out of my pocket as well, just the key fob fell out.
Yeah.
So we're walking back to the car and I like close enough to like unlock the doors and I start tapping my pocket. I don't feel it.
Panic.
And then I'm going, we just left like a grass field that's like three football fields big. I'm like, I don't, how, and it's
it's
a small black rectangle. Like, how am I going to find this? So we go back to like where we were.
Retrace your steps.
And in like 35 seconds, Jake goes, is this it? And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, and is this it? Do you think there's more random car keys in this grass? I found it is the right thing to say. Not like, hey, Dad, is this yours or is it somebody else's? But I couldn't believe how fast we found it.
You
30
know,
seconds.
That's scary. Lucky there.
Do you guys recall the time? Who was it? Champ Bailey? He snatched Michael Crabtree's.
That was Aqib Talib.
Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
Yes, Aqib Talib snatched
chain.
Crabtree's chain. That was
someone
spectacular
also
too.
Someone did that before the Florida LSU game too. There was a lot of things going on. That there's a coach that's suspended, but one of the players. No, it wasn't. Sorry, it was one of these scrub teams were playing one of the powerhouses.
Yes,
and they snatched some chain from somebody, and the guy got benched. the coach yes. benched him for the entire game. He said, you're not playing, which I appreciated because I was like, what are you doing?
I think it was an SEC school.
Yeah, it was an SEC school against like what was definitely, if it wasn't the FCS, it was definitely not a Power Four.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they got smoked. But the guy that snatched the chain before the game because he wanted to be a Aqib Talib got benched for the game. So yeah, I wearing the expensive jewelry, not something.
It was Cespedes in 2018 who slid into second, and his diamonds went all over the field because the chain broke.
I remember that happened too. Yeah,
we had a dude this weekend too on one of those smaller schools step on a kicker's foot in the I think it was LSU southeastern Louisiana. After a kick, the guy walked over and just stomped on his foot and kept going.
I did see that. Kids these days.
Exactly.
Better raise them right.
All right. Before the couple's retreat starts and they're listening to the show, I want to get to this Maggie mental takedown involving the Bills. So we'll do that. We'll get a Justin Rock update, all of that. When we come back, it's Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, 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 EJ Stewart, Andrew Bogish, in for Maggie and Perloff. It is the Maggie and Perloff Show on Infinity Sports Network. Number to call in, 888-710-4ISN. Now, before we went to break, Andrew Bogish mentioned how we need to talk about one Maggie Gray and the Bills' perfect season that, at this point, we can just write in as a lock at this point, right?
Well, I think that's the only conclusion we can draw right now, but this begins with the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
Because they apparently, amongst themselves, after a 2-0 start, have been discussing going 17-0, and then they lose at Cleveland on Sunday in fairly inexplicable fashion. So that angered their head coach. Can we quickly hear Matt LaFleur for a second, guys, on hearing this undefeated talk in his locker room? This is cut number 14.
I just think this league is such a week-to-week league, and you can never lose sight of that. And you can't take any moment, any game for granted. And the goal, and I've said it a million times to you guys, I don't think I've obviously said it enough to our team, the goal is to go 1-0 every week. And it pisses me off when we start talking about things outside of the next game, things that are way down the road. Like, focus on, keep the focus on the present, on the now, and worry about getting better each and every day.
Good for Matt LaFleur. He is 100% correct. There is, you should be focusing week to week, game to game. Be 1-0 every week. All the coaching cliches are out there. Plus, I'm of the belief that a perfect season is an unnecessary extra burden. It's hard enough to win the whole damn thing. And this is true in March Madness. It's true in college football.
Yep.
College football is different because you almost need sometimes to be undefeated, especially, you know, when we're in the poll era.
Now
it's a little bit different. But, like, let the 72 Dolphins pop their champagne for perpetuity. Nobody needs to be 17-0 and then win playoff games in a Super Bowl. Nobody does, except the Buffalo Bills. Because here we are. They're 3-0. Their next game is the Saints. They're going to play that game, despite the physical danger for the Saints playing that game in Buffalo. Then there's a New England game. And then they go to the Falcons, who just made multiple changes to their offensive operation because they didn't score a point in Carolina on Sunday. Oh, and they had the Bills do those Panthers in late October. Now, there are the Chiefs. There are the Bucks. They have to go to Houston. They have to go to Pittsburgh. They have to play the Eagles in the second to last week of the regular season. Yeah. So there are some hard games on this schedule, but they are few and far between. And we can all nod in agreement that the thing that we need most around here is not just sweet Margaret Gray inching towards a possible return to the Super Bowl for her Bills.
Right.
But just imagine 8-0, 10-0, 12-0, 17-0, first round bye. Yep. Now we're in playoff games.
Mm.
I mean, get me to that. Get me to the undefeated Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl, and Maggie is at Radio Row with Perloff trying not to jump through tables or run on treadmills for hours and hours and hours. So I think it's our duty to talk this into existence as much as possible around here.
I'm still a Bucks lover.
This would be way better than Maggie's drought of drought year, whatever was year the drought.
Yeah.
That happening, this, that, nothing. This is way more important for our sake. And I think what's going to be funny about it, if slash when it happens, is Maggie, who last week wanted to be very clear, being like, I don't like undefeated seasons. I don't care for undefeated seasons. We don't need an undefeated season. Let them get to 12-0. I don't mean 12-0. Let them get to 9-0. Let them get to 9-0 and listen to the shift that's going to happen. Now it's going to be like, oh, my God, how was this game so close against, you know, our second game against the Jets was too close. It's going to be like, why would, I thought you didn't want to go undefeated. Why are you concerned about a close win? Like,
and it ends up being a 14-point win for the Bills or a 10-point
win. Right, yeah. They would have won by 17 points and, you know, whatever. And the Jets would have got a touchdown.
Yeah, but it was close until the 9-minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, she will then live and die with every Bills game while they're undefeated, even though it started with, I don't want them to go undefeated. They should not go for the undefeated season. That is going to change once you're in it.
And I think Perloff started doing this about a week or two ago, where he was just sarcastically referencing the easy schedule and the chance to go undefeated. We got to keep that going. It's just talk about it like it's going to happen, like it is written in the stars that this is, they are destined to be perfect, and just let it continue to melt that brain of hers.
I'm going to speak into existence because I do want this to happen. Sean McDermott is the thing that I keep thinking about. And I can't imagine him coaching a season where his team doesn't lose a game because of him. Like, that to me is like unfathomable almost. But it also is unfathomable that somehow a team that once again was first place in their division came up with a schedule like this. I don't know. I guess it's the combination of having, I mean, they have the NFC North, but I guess having the East in terms of your division and then the NFC North as your, or NFC South rather, as your other division you're playing. I guess that's how you get all these easy games.
Meanwhile, but the Giants, who are useless, have the hardest schedule.
It's supposed to be a quote-unquote balanced schedule in the NFL. I don't quite see it. Number to call in, 888-710-4ISN. But I do agree with you on Matt LaFleur. He was right to blow up. Rasheed Walker was the defensive tackle who made the comment about going undefeated. I think the Packers are a little overrated, but we can talk about that in a little bit. First, let's get to Justin Rock, who joins us with some more updates. What's up, Justin?
Doing well, EJ. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Bogish, as well. A great Monday Night Football matchup yesterday. Lions outlasting the Ravens 38-30. Detroit going 3 of 3 on fourth downs, including a critical one in the fourth quarter. Although on Westwood 1, Kurt Warner didn't exactly agree with the decision.
I would try to draw them offsides, and then I would punt.
All right.
I would not run a play here and give the Ravens a short field, but we've already mentioned it numerous times. Nobody goes for it more on fourth down than Dan Campbell.
Montgomery's the back, Goff under center, three tight ends, 49 to Detroit, 4th and 2. Goff gets the snap, spins, fakes the handoff, block Montgomery. Here's a pass downfield. It's an over-the-shoulder catch at the 30-yard line down the sideline. St. Brown, what a call! What a play!
What a play it was. Kevin Harlan on the call there. So Kurt Warner didn't agree, but it all worked out for the Lions. Detroit's two-headed rushing attack, the difference. David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, 218 yards rushing combined, 4 touchdowns in the win. We don't talk a lot about Jahmyr Gibbs being one of the better running backs in the sport right now, but how about this? Among players in NFL history, only 2 have 25 or more rushing scores, 2,400-plus rushing yards, 120-plus catches, and 5 or more receiving touchdowns in their first 35 career games. Jahmyr Gibbs and Hall of Famer Edgerrin James. Those are the only 2 players who have done that in NFL history.
Yeah, he's a stud. I mean, he's an absolute stud.
I just feel like no one talks about him when we talk about great running backs in the sport right now. He is a guy, maybe because he's working in tandem with David Montgomery, just sort of gets lost in the shuffle. But I saw that, and I mean, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and me being the never-ending defender of running backs, he was the 12th pick in a draft. Context obviously matters. He's more of a luxury pick than a necessary pick, but there are people who were confused when they said his name that night.
Definitely.
And I like the idea of having good players, just guys that can do things that other people can't do. And they obviously are very different on offense because they have him and David Montgomery.
I mean, what he could do out of the backfield catching the football has obviously been a game changer for them over the course of the last couple of years. And I mean, that offense, even with Ben Johnson now in Chicago, clearly not losing, not losing too much off their fastball.
And you mentioned that draft, too. They took Jahmyr Gibbs, running back, also Jack Campbell,
right,
linebacker, and was like, linebacker, running back in the first round? Come on, guys, what are you doing? Well, Jack Campbell had a busted lip and was making plays all over the place.
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like he is coming into his own, too.
That's football.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe
he was a great college player, too, Jack Campbell.
He was a great college player, yeah. So it feels like maybe the Lions were onto something.
And clearly they were doing something right in that front office, and it's shown up over the course of the last couple of seasons. Looking forward to week 4, obviously some big games, Chiefs and Ravens. One of the biggest games will be the Cowboys and Packers. Micah Parsons making his return to Dallas with the Green Bay Packers. Jerry Jones was asked yesterday whether or not the Cowboys will put together a tribute video for their former All-Pro. Jerry saying they will not do so, adding, quote, it was not appropriate.
Wow.
So do you guys think it was appropriate whether or not for the Packers to play a tribute video for a guy who is probably one of the better defensive players for Dallas over the last 30 years?
That's crazy. So here's the thing about tribute videos.
Well, you know the reason why is he doesn't want to deal with everybody booing after they play the tribute video, realizing we could have Micah Parsons on this defense, and instead we're giving up 37 points to the Giants and 31 points to the Bears.
Hey,
that's a good Giants team, all right?
that definitely is part
better than the Jets.
That definitely is part of the calculation, I think. I do think that like the fact that the trade so far is not going well for the Cowboys. Now, I think the Cowboys should not be thinking of it like that. Like, when you make this trade, it is about whatever comes of the draft pick. So they shouldn't be concerned really so much about what the Packers are doing right now and how Micah Parsons looks for them. But this is a me thing, and I'm very curious how you guys feel. I just don't like the tribute video. I don't know. There are to me, that is one of those things. It's almost like the Basketball Hall of Fame, where everyone is now going to the Hall of Fame, and we have these conversations about guys. I'm like, guys, they're getting in. Like, you're asking about you're amazed that Tracy McGrady is going to the Hall of Fame. Newsflash, everyone goes to the Hall of Fame in basketball. I feel like in sports now, it's become the thing where it doesn't matter if you never won a title, doesn't matter if you weren't even like a Pro Bowl or All-Star player for your team, if you were there long enough and you made enough of an impact, you're getting a tribute video. We don't need to give a tribute video for everybody. Now, based on the current status, Micah Parsons definitely applies. But in a vacuum, I actually don't mind them not giving him one, because this is the Cowboys. In many ways, they're like, I know, nowhere near the titles, but in some ways, they're like the NFL parallel to the Yankees. Like, he's not someone, because of what other guys have done, that should be looked at as one of the all-time greats for the Cowboys. But given what they've been for the last 20 years, yes, he absolutely deserves one. I'm just not into the tribute videos. I'm done with them.
Yeah, I don't think I need a, like, really produced, with like a soundtrack video from Micah Parsons. But I mean, they should put him on one of the huge screens with like a welcome back, Mike, or thank you, Micah.
Yeah, exactly.
And let the crowd applaud and then boo Jerry. I don't know if there's a follow-up. They should do that. They don't need production, but they should. They get away with knowledge of the fact that he's in the building.
Just something small. It doesn't have to be like a full 30-second, 60-second produced piece with, you know, Micah Parsons' greatest hits from his Cowboys career. Just
right.
Just a little something to say, hey, you know, we know you're on the other team now. Thanks for everything you did to contribute not only to us, but to our community. And, I mean, going into the trade, I mean, everything he said was, I want to stay here. It wasn't like he was, you know, firebombing his way out the door.
Yeah.
He wanted to stay there realistically, but just didn't work out.
I think the biggest lie that's been told about this whole thing is Jerry saying that, oh, I love Micah Parsons. I have no issue with Micah Parsons.
Like, didn't he call him Michael at the...
Michael
Parsons.
Yeah. Yes. The one where he kept calling him Michael, which it became more and more of the press conference, but the last one they did. where he was saying, oh, yeah, I love Micah Parsons, and you know, there's no hard feelings. Like, there clearly are.
Yeah.
Like, this idea that somehow this is just business, and, you know, when this is all done, Micah's going to be welcomed back. Like, that's nonsense. Like,
clearly not.
Yeah, there's clearly major issues there.
No, definitely major issues there, and it'll be very interesting to see just exactly how that all breaks down on Sunday between Dallas and Green Bay, especially with Green Bay looking to bounce back after the frustrating loss last week.
All right, Justin, thanks so much. We'll see you again one more time next hour. Should we dip our toes in some college basketball news from yesterday?
I think we should.
Coaching change coming out of nowhere in the SEC. We'll
Fordham again?
SEC.
Oh, my bad.
Thanks for that. We'll see in just a second. It's Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network.
I don't know his name.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Big coaching change in college basketball. What's up? This is EJ Stewart, joined by Andrew Bogus. This is the Maggie and Perloff Show. Maggie and Perloff out today. And I think one of the most surprising headlines from yesterday was the news that Bruce Pearl was going to retire as the head coach of Auburn. He had taken them to the Final Four last year. Auburn had become really one of the preeminent basketball programs in the country, which is quite a shock considering what Auburn basketball has been for most of their existence. It's basically been Charles Barkley and nothing. Chuck Person maybe?
Yeah.
That's it. Like, not a lot, right? And here, this is a program that really has become a team knocking on the door of winning a championship. Bruce Pearl is retiring. He is very politically involved. There was rumors that he would run for Alabama Senate. He has since said that that's not going to happen, so I guess he dispelled his own rumors that he created. Yeah. But he says he's retiring. He's not going into Senate. He's just going to, you know, just retire and go off into the sunset, so to speak. And now his son takes over the program, which that part is a little interesting because you're talking about Stephen Pearl, right?
Yeah.
He just became an assistant, I think, in basketball in 2017.
Yeah, played for his dad.
Played for his dad. But otherwise has not really been in any other kind of coaching circle beyond just this universe that's been created for his son. And Bruce Pearl retiring so late into the offseason, like college basketball, and we're talking about, Midnight Madness is happening very soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think technically yesterday was the first day you could have an actual practice.
Right.
So, the offseason is
it's kind of over. Yeah.
So the timing of this was designed to make Stephen Pearl,
yeah, definitely,
the head coach. So I'm very eager for the reporting to come out of Auburn about how the power play went down here, where Bruce was like, and this is just my theory,
yeah,
I'm stepping down now, and where you have no other choice but to give my son the job. And by the way, his son has the job. He's got a 5-year contract. He's not just the interim coach. Tony Bennett stepped out of Virginia at a time where the handoff was directly to one of his assistants, but only for that year.
Yep.
Now Ryan Odom, the old UMBC head coach who was at VCU, he's now the Virginia coach full-time. But this is a full-time shift. And I'll be honest, I don't know anything about Steve Pearl's ability to be a head coach.
Right.
But he's only been on his dad's staff, basically, and played for his dad. And it certainly seems like his dad, there's like a monarchy where the dad gives up power to his son, and now Steven's in control of Auburn men's basketball.
Yeah, and I was surprised to see them go ahead with the 5-year deal for Stephen Pearl. And I know, I think Bruce has missed at least one game. I remember, I think Stephen may have coached because Bruce was out for one reason. But I believe he has been their lead assistant, so he's definitely been setting him up for this spot. But to me, it just goes to show some of the hypocrisy when we talk about nepotism, right? Because Bruce Pearl himself actually was on social media lamenting one LeBron James and Bronny James talking about the issues of nepotism.
Right.
And here we are where you quit basically a day before you're about to start work.
He's installing his
so that your
kid
son
head coach.
Can become the head coach of Auburn, where I just feel like if Bruce Pearl retired, there's no way I think Stephen Pearl is getting that job. Maybe he gets interviewed, maybe he's a candidate, but I don't think he gets that job.
All of that crossed my mind yesterday because I went to Stepanak Open Gym yesterday and John Calipari was there with Brad Calipari, and yeah. That crossed my mind too. When John retires, is Brad going to take over?
It would not surprise me because I think that this is starting to become the trend happening in college basketball. I want to get to Jay, who's in Nashville. What's up, Jay?
Man, this is right why when people ask me who's your team, I don't like saying who my team is. I'd rather just say I'm a fan of the game. Mm. You know what I mean? I just love the game because I hate being a fan of one team because you get your feelings hurt every time. And this is Auburn. It's always, whether it be football or basketball, Auburn and coaches, for some reason, it's like musical chairs for no reason. Well, football I can understand, but there's something else behind that. And that's a topic for another day, but this is like totally out of left field, and like it kind of, you know, being a fan of one team, it kind of ties in the whole Maggie Gray scenario here.
Yeah,
just hear me out, because like you guys are trying to speak into existence of the Bills having undefeated. You better hope the Bills lose a couple games during the regular season. If they go into the playoffs, I'm telling you, you're going to be dealing with a year-round schizophrenic. Like, first of all, your Maggie Cake is going to turn into, like, more games they win, the more of a schizophrenic you're going to turn into. And then if they lose, like, she might take a month off of work. You know what I mean? That's what sucks about being a fan of one team. I'd rather just be a fan of the game. You get your heart broken every time.
That is a mic drop there. Thanks for the phone call. A month off. I can actually see that. If this situation where the Bills are undefeated and they lose the Super Bowl, Maggie's just staying in the Bay Area.
Her whole vacation in one swoop.
Yeah.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.